This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for being with us here on Tactics, where speech isn't violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. Thank you so much for being with us here on the program, and I do want to send out a special thank you to everybody that joined us for our special live broadcast earlier today that happened at the Capitol steps. Unfortunately, it wasn't nearly as exciting as we thought it was going to be, and I'll explain why and some of the circumstances surrounding that in a minute. We are going to start with our coronavirus update here in the state of Alabama, as we always do, but that is definitely coming down the pipe. So what we'll do now is we'll just go ahead and go over that update, and then we will quickly shift to what all happened today, give a quick recap, and also let everybody on the other platforms that unfortunately were not able to see that because of a technical issue that we ran into. Really, Facebook was the only place that got to see exactly everything that was happening down there. For everybody on YouTube and Mixer and Twitch and Periscope, I apologize for that. There wasn't really anything that I could do about it. We were having some issues, but don't worry, we're on all of the platforms now, and we are ready to give you all the latest information on what is going on in the state of Alabama in regards to the Wuhan flu. So let's go ahead and bring up the latest from the Alabama Department of Public Health. You will see there that we have 5,296 confirmed cases, a little over 48,000 total tested, and you really start to get into some scary numbers when you look at how many have died from the illness, because you may recall, yesterday we were at 113 deaths, today we are at 144. So that's an increase of 31 people that have died just in the past 24 hours. When it comes to this, the hospitalization rate is roughly what you would expect it to be, just barely under 700. And so that one really hasn't stuck out in any significant way, at least not in a way that we would be able to report on it and tell you anything based on it or based on the numbers. And so regardless of how you're looking at today, because that's just kind of what we've been really kind of becoming accustomed to since this whole thing started, is that we have good days and we have bad days. Some days things are looking up, some days not so much. And this is one of those days that looks pretty bleak. We're not seeing anything to the level of some kind of ridiculous spike in massive numbers. This isn't the largest amount of new cases that we've had in a day. It's in the top 10, but it's not one of the biggest. It's significant, but not one that should in any way cause some kind of panic. The big news story revolves around the deaths, which we'll get to in a second. So if you're looking at that chart, and we've been monitoring this since the very beginning, trying to get a pretty good look and zero in on whether or not Alabama has spiked or peaked, you'll see that there's a slight increase today compared to yesterday, as opposed to it and some of the days before, which would suggest that really there's nothing to suggest. Again, I'm getting tired of reporting on this, but it's not so much of an outlier that it could be considered a significant spike. It's an increase for sure. And today was not a good day looked at when you're looking at the rest of the data and understanding it in context, but it's still not something that's outrageous. It's still not something that, you know, stop the presses, that kind of thing. It's just not. And hopefully we never see that. Hopefully we don't see some kind of massive spike. There have been experts that projected that Alabama would start peaking around this time. The next to last and the last week in April is sort of when they predicted that this thing would hit its heyday in Alabama. As of yet, we've not seen a spike, which again seems to suggest, as I've been saying on this program for a number of days, it looks as though flattening the curve has started to work. And so this is really where we are right now. Let's go ahead and look at the new cases, because there's something interesting here I want to bring to your attention as well. You'll notice, and I said this yesterday, that we seem to have gotten into a pattern to where we're kind of, for the past 4 days, floating somewhere between 150 and 200 new cases a day. That was obviously broken today. It wasn't like shattered or in any kind of dramatic way, it looks like this is our fifth or sixth largest day for, sixth it appears to be, the sixth largest day since we've started tracking the new cases. And remember, these are just cases for that one specific day in the state of Alabama. So today is definitely a bad day, but it's also not one that is unlike anything that we've seen before. It's not unprecedented, which is a word I'm frankly kind of getting really tired of hearing in this new news cycle where all we talk about is coronavirus 24 hours a day. And unfortunately, I'm no exception because there's just not really anything else going on. And I understand that that's what you and your family are concerned about, and understandably so. But if we're looking at the data right now, if we're looking at what this tells us as Alabamians, it's really that there's really not a level of predictability here. The only pattern that we had, which was a pattern that had only been going on for 4 days, has now been surpassed by a decent amount. Not a ridiculous level, not something that is going to shock the CDC when they see this number as compared to other states or anything like that, but one that is significant and one that says that we're probably not leveled off, at least not yet. We're a lot closer to being leveled off than we were a couple months ago. We're starting to get into somewhat of a routine with this thing, but the point is, there's really nothing here that jumps out at you. Where the real interesting piece of data is going to be in the deaths for this virus. And again, this is a statistic that tends to lag behind. But again, in keeping with what has gone on nationally, it seems like people just are not dying from this virus on the weekends, which is a very odd phenomenon for a number of reasons. But you will also notice that after our weekend lull, and that really in Alabama has seemed to flow into Monday as well, that we see a really big spike of 31 new cases, because for the past 3 days, we saw not a single coronavirus death. And now we see a spike in 31 cases, which is the biggest single day gain that we have ever had. We have never had 31 people die from this virus in the state of Alabama in a single day. So that is something to certainly be aware of, and certainly something to be concerned about. But it also does show, when you're looking at that, it's possible that what's happening is that not only are you having deaths trail by a few days when you're talking about it compared to new testing, for example, you're also talking about it trailing for a few days, at least possibly, just not counting the numbers and not getting it into the system in the way that it needs to be until after the weekend is over. And if that is the case, if we're looking at something that over the course of 4 days, dividing 31 by 4, that leaves you with roughly 8-ish, somewhere around that ballpark, somewhere around that neighborhood, under 10 for sure. But that leaves us with roughly 8, not quite 8, but roughly 8, averaging out over the course of these 4 days, if that is the case. And if so, that's really not something that is wildly out of the norm for what we've seen leading up until the weekend. Now, I don't know if that's a reporting issue. I don't know if it's just that they're not reporting those deaths until after the weekend is over or what's going on, but it does seem very odd and very suspicious that we just somehow, from a disease everybody decides not to die on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That doesn't track with the way that viruses tend to work. And so I think it's more than likely a reporting issue that people just aren't reporting it until the weekend is over. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe there really is something to this whole weekend thing. I don't know. But the point is, just looking at the data and looking at what we have right now, if you're looking at that 31 death toll, which is alarming, and I'm not saying that there's no reason to pay attention to that, because obviously I am. I'm spending more time on the show on it. But if you spread that out over 4 days, it winds up being about 7 or 8 deaths on average. And that's what we were seeing in the days leading up to that. And so if it is a reporting thing, then we're not seeing anything too out of the ordinary there either. it feels weird to talk about this as being the new normal and eight Alabamians being killed by this thing being something that is just sort of average at this point. But that's the way that it is. But one thing that I want to bring up in all of this, because I think it's very important, I think that unfortunately the vast majority of the political noise that is going on around the Twitterverse and everywhere else where people talk politics, the most unfortunate thing that I've seen is that there are a lot of people, and I mentioned this yesterday in my interview with Becky Gerritsen, there are an awful lot of people that you are hearing from both sides that are giving two extreme viewpoints, neither one of which is very good or productive. On the one side, you've got people screaming, this whole thing is a hoax, it's manufactured, it's not even real, we need to open it up, Dr. Fauci is duping Trump, and you know, of course, the whole thing is Trump-centric for some reason, which I do not understand. But Dr. Fauci is duping Trump, this whole thing is made up, and there's nothing to it. And then you have on the other side, a whole bunch of people saying, no, this is the worst thing ever, we need to self-quarantine for 2 years. And that's the only thing that we can do. We have to self-quarantine until we get a vaccine. If that takes a year, if that takes 2 years, if that takes 18 months, doesn't matter. That's what we've got to do. Neither one of those options are workable. Well, I take that back. Technically, the first option is workable, where they're basically saying it's all a hoax and we need to open everything back and have it exactly the way it was before. That's not a good strategy, but it is technically doable. It will end badly, in my opinion, but, I mean, you could do it. But I think that the better way to handle this is actually somewhere in the middle. And what I mean by that is, I think that the correct approach is the one that a lot of the people at the protest that, again, I'm going to talk about here in a second, were presenting, and some of the measures that Lieutenant Governor Answorth has put out, which is, okay, here's a plan to open up some of the things that aren't open right now, and let's do it slowly while maintaining social distancing as much as humanly possible. That's reasonable, because that acknowledges, A, that this is a very real problem, and we should take it seriously, and B, we also recognize that we cannot shut down society entirely for a couple of years until we all wait until this thing has some kind of treatment or some kind of cure. And so it really does take a much more moderated approach. And I'm not saying moderated because moderation is always necessarily good or because the middle is always where you should be. I don't believe that at all. But what I do believe is in this one particular circumstance, those really loud voices on either side are both completely wrong, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure exactly where that truth is, and nobody is right now because of the level of uncertainty. But I gotta believe that, first of all, I know this isn't even really just an opinion. Shutting down our economy for 2 years, that is a death sentence to the entire country and pretty much the entirety of Western civilization. We can't survive like that, and the world depends too much on America for certain things to be able to survive like that and not have severe, severe consequences to the economy, and not just the economy, our society and our way of life. I'm not saying that we as a human race would not possibly survive that. I'm not suggesting that at all. But I'm saying certain important aspects of our society could not continue to function if that were the case. And so the idea that we need to continue to start opening this thing back up, and I'm not saying, you know, go full force balls to the wall as hard as you can immediately and just open it back up the way that it was before. I've never said that. Let's slow walk it, but we need to start doing something because every day that we're denying oxygen to this economy, its brain cells are dying. And if we want there to be anything left to save, we've got to start opening that back up pretty darn quickly. And so to sort of give you an idea of where I am and to help you understand the way that I'm taking this, I don't believe this thing is a hoax. And I think that the initial numbers were overestimated, but I think that they were done so in good faith. In other words, doctors and the people that are looking at this, they weren't trying to trick people. They weren't trying to push some kind of political agenda. They genuinely believed this is how bad it was going to be. I think they really thought that, and that's the reason they have advised people, governors, people in the legislatures, the president, that society needs to react the way that they have. And so to kind of illustrate this, this is a graph from the New Atlantic, and a couple important things that you need to understand about the graph, the data that was used to compile this. First of all, they did a side-by-side comparison on what week in the year it was. And you have to understand that you are looking at different data points. For example, when you're looking at the Asian flu there, you have to remember that they're using records that are pretty old, which means that there are different recording methods, and there's going to be some discrepancy there. And that they don't start it on the first of the year. They start it when the flu season is starting to kick off. So there are some differences there. But ultimately, the important thing to understand here in the weeks of this whole thing taking off is you're looking at new deaths. So if you're looking at new deaths of things like car crashes, the 2017-2018 flu, if you're looking at flu and pneumonia from 2007 combined, if you're looking at the Asian flu from the 1950s, or heart disease and cancer from just a couple of years ago, those are the new deaths. And you'll notice that heart disease and cancer are basically straight lines. And that's because we've had these for a very long time. They're very predictable. And because of that, the new deaths that we see, and because it's not caused by an infection, it's not seasonal, those stay roughly the same throughout the entire year. But you look at COVID-19, and there is a marked difference. Now, again, it is entirely possible that the human race builds up antibodies to this thing and that you see a really, really high death rate, a spike like you're seeing on that chart, and then in all the weeks following this, you see it dip down to virtually nothing and it continues on and we wind up with total dead actually significantly less than any of the things that we're talking about here. It's unlikely, but that is possible. And so they acknowledge in their own article that we're looking at incomplete data, and to at least a certain degree, we're comparing apples to oranges. They're trying not to because there's just not a whole lot of things to compare this thing to. But comparing a brand new infectious disease in its first few weeks, of course that's going to infect more people, and of course it is going to cause more deaths, because doctors don't know how to deal with it, and because you have that spike of both infected people and doctors not having the expertise to deal with this the way that they would normally in a disease that they're more accustomed to treating, then you're going to get that giant red spike that you're seeing right there where you see a lot of new deaths in a short amount of time. And that's another thing that you need to keep in mind as well. We don't have to have a vaccine or a cure for this thing to get that number to go significantly down. A treatment would be more than sufficient for that. And there's a couple different people that are saying now that hydroxychloroquine is not showing any results. I saw one of the studies on that, and there's compelling evidence that hydroxychloroquine, at least in this one study and the way that it was administered there, was not having anywhere near the results that they were hoping that it would. But ultimately, it goes down to this idea, and this is what I want to illustrate, that I really do take this seriously, that I am looking at the data and saying this thing is a juggernaut. It's not the apocalypse, but at the same time, this is something that is causing a great deal of death and devastation, and we need to do the best that we can to take it seriously. That being said, and if you go on my Facebook page, if you're looking at that, and I'll probably wind up rebroadcasting some kind of highlight reel or some kind of conglomeration of the best moments in that particular broadcast, because it was so spread out because of the way they handled it, there weren't many of them, because they basically tried to shut us down. But nonetheless, when we're looking at this, there are a lot of people that assume, because I do want the stay-at-home orders repealed, that I'm not taking this seriously, or I don't believe that it's really as serious as people are saying it is. No, I believe that it's that serious. I believe that it's something that is causing a great deal of problems for a number of people. but I also understand that ultimately in this country, we do have rights. Not privileges, not permissions, rights. And the thing about rights, especially God-given rights, which the Declaration of Independence declares that we have just by virtue of being human beings, conveyed upon us by nature's God and nature's law, then the government is incapable of taking those away from us. That ultimately, the government's only job is to protect those rights. And right now, I'm so disgusted with what I'm seeing from my own state. Now, granted, we've been seeing things like this in other states where law enforcement officials are trying to shut down free speech and shut down protest across the country. I never thought I would see it in my own state. Especially from people that are primarily Republican in a Republican-controlled state government. I mean, no offense to our Democrat friends here in Alabama, but keep in mind that the Republicans are controlling the governorship, the House, and the legislature. And since we have elected officials, we don't have political parties to elect our judges, but we have very conservative judges in the state of Alabama as well. And yet what you're seeing here, and what we're looking at with the broadcast earlier today, and I encourage you to go back and still watch it on my Facebook page if you get a chance to, they shut down the road that was in front of the Capitol building where we were going to hold the protest. Here was our plan, and then here's how the government trying to prevent that protest affected that plan. Because those are two very important distinctions in telling this story. Our plan was to have a place, a podium, and we were going to broadcast and live stream it over the internet, to where a person could walk up to the podium by themselves, because we were just going to have the microphone laying there, have a person walk up to the podium in front of the Capitol building by themselves, get out of their car because they were going to drive on the road that runs directly in front of the Capitol, walk out, be 6 feet apart from everybody, say something, and we were going to give everybody 2 minutes, and then have them get back in their car and drive away and move out of the way for the next person. That was our plan from the very beginning. And this wasn't a secret plan. We explained to people that this was something that they were going to be able to do. They had planned this. I was not an organizer. I was just helping cover it. But the people that put it together, Stand Up Alabama, they did a great job in trying to cover every base and making sure that they announced it and told people, don't get out of your cars unless you're going to speak. You don't have to get out of your cars. You can just do a drive around. All of these things, trying to do everything they could to, even though they disagree with the stay-at-home orders, still abide by them because that's what law-abiding citizens do. Even if you disagree with a rule, even if you disagree with a law, you do the best that you can to try to abide by it. Because that's what somebody that is concerned about being a good citizen tries to do, even if you dislike the law. Now think about that. This is not just a law that they didn't like. This is a law that they came here specifically to protest. And yet what wound up happening is that the police officers, and by the way, I don't blame the police officers. They're just doing their job. They're just doing what they're told. It has nothing to do with them. I bear no personal animus toward them whatsoever. The cops didn't just wake up and on a whim decide to shut down the road in front of them. But anyway, so what they did is they closed off the road leading up to the Capitol, and then they closed the front road there. So not only were you closed off from being able to drive in front of it, but so everybody that would have normally come up to the podium to say something over the broadcast to Governor Ivey would not be able to park and to go up to the podium. And so what they wound up doing is they turned a protest that was specifically designed to adhere to the stay-at-home orders and the guidelines and social distancing, the very things that they were there to protest. They made it to where people had to actually come out and walk and be nearer to other people in order for the thing to take place. They literally made us less safe and made it harder for us to comply with the government's own rules in order to do that. Now, the excuse that they gave for the reason that the roads were closed was because of construction. Now, granted, I'm not a construction worker, But I'm looking, and I was there the entire time that this was taking place. I'm looking at this road to the left, to the right, all the way down. There was not a single piece of construction equipment. There was not a single construction worker. There was not even somebody surveying the road. And by the way, that road is brand spanking new. It might be the nicest road in the entire city of Montgomery, which, by the way, you would kind of expect considering it's the road that literally runs in front of the Capitol building. And yet, despite all this, they closed it for construction and made sure that people couldn't drive up. The government, in trying to stymie people from doing this because they didn't like the protest, they didn't like people saying something that was negative towards the government, they wound up trying to shut it down, and it actually made it less safe and made it harder for people like me who were taking this thing very seriously, and I have two risk factors, so I was trying to stay away from as many people as I could today, that they still did so in a way that makes it actually more dangerous and more difficult for them to do that. It was very reminiscent of what happened in the, I want to say it was the 2012 shutdown with Barack Obama. You remember that what they did was they said, we can't spend any money because the Republicans have shut down the government. And what they wound up doing was they had guards and workers there at the in D.C. actually go and shut things down that normally aren't shut down. Open air memorials that are available to the public. Like, I would have at least understood if they had, I don't know, turned the fountain off at the memorial, but they didn't even do that. They straight up took people that would not have, they would not have had to pay under normal circumstances to put fences and chains around open door memorials and lock them up. And so they wound up doing something that made absolutely no sense in enforcing their own policy, a rule that they made up. And that's exactly what you saw happen in Montgomery today. I don't know if the orders came from Governor Ivey. I don't know if it came from Mayor Reed. I'm not sure exactly who gave that order or what happened or how the chain of command works there. But I do know that somebody in the government who did not want Americans to be able to speak freely, speak out of their protests, whether they agreed with them or not, that they didn't want people to use their right to assembly, their right to free speech, and their right to petition the government with grievances. Three of the first five rights found in the First Amendment. And we've already seen and done entire specials on, especially with our interview with Colonel John Eidsmo, we've already done specials on how the government is severely trying to curtail one of those other rights, the right to your freedom of religion and the exercise thereof. Ultimately, this shows an animus towards free speech. It shows an animus towards the people of Alabama that were just there to have their voices heard, even if that meant just driving past them in a car. And they also, the cops wound up pulling people over for honking their horns. Now, on a technicality, it is an incorrect use of the horn. I get that. They got them on a technical, but the cops knew, and everybody in that line knew why people were honking their horns. It was not as though, yes, it technically broke the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law is what I'm trying to say. So it was a bit heavy-handed, to be perfectly honest. But despite all this, there weren't people arguing with the cops. Everybody tried to be in compliance with it. When the cops started telling people they couldn't cluster together on the sidewalk, we tried to move it away. That one was actually really fascinating because they said there can't be more than 10 people on the sidewalk. And I was looking around, and first of all, there was nobody within 6 feet of me. And I'm one of the 10 people on the sidewalk, and I counted them up, and there were 12 people on the sidewalk. Two of the people on the sidewalk were members of the media, not even members of the group Stand Up Alabama, and that's excluding me. That was one of WSFA's reporters and another one from a CBS affiliate. I didn't recognize their logo, but they were a CBS affiliate. And so I found that really fascinating that they were saying that there were more than 10 people and you had to disperse. Well, two of the people that put us in excess of 10 were actually not members of the group anyway. They were just members of the media that were standing more than 6 feet apart behind cameras. And so there was obviously somebody in the government there that did not want that protest to happen. And what is truly concerning about that is that I have seen over the past couple of days a terrifying boldness from government officials to shut down constitutional rights. Because whether you're a liberal governor or a conservative governor, whether it's a conservative protest or a liberal protest, when you start, I've never seen the level of enthusiasm and brashness when it comes to shutting down protest. Now, if you have a protest and it turns into a street brawl, okay, yeah, definitely shut that one down. I don't think any reasonable person has a problem with that. But that's obviously not what was happening here, and that's not what's happened in protests around the country. And this goes back to something, and I actually monologued a little bit about this during our broadcast earlier today while it was happening. This comes down to a matter of good faith. And what is so alarming about this is when you have people trying to operate in good faith and the government comes down on them anyway, that's a bad sign. And that's also why you have people getting frustrated and then just saying, okay, we tried to do it every single way that we possibly could to be in compliance with your law, so screw it, we're just going to ignore it. I'm not saying that that's the right attitude to have, but that's the attitude that people adopt when you do stuff like that. Because, like I said today, everybody wanted to just be able to drive up by themselves, jump out of their car, say a couple words, jump back in, never break the social distancing protocol, not even once. But they intentionally had to move the whole thing and make it to where people couldn't do that, and the driving route that they had posted online several weeks ago was not accessible, and so they had to move the whole thing to where people had to actually get out of their cars and stand on the sidewalk where they had significantly less room and wound up having to sort of cluster together. They made it to where you couldn't do what they wanted to do and be in compliance with the law, even though they took every measure to try to do so. This is the same problem that I have with churches. I haven't been to church in a month. I don't think I've ever been able to say that at any point in my entire life. I haven't been to a physical church building. I mean, I've been to church, but I haven't been in a physical church building in a month now. But I think they should still have the right to do it. And when you have groups of people, groups of churches that are saying, look, we'll do everything we can to continue to meet together, we'll sanitize our hands, we'll have all our workers wearing gloves, we'll buy air purifiers to make sure that germs aren't airborne, even though they say that that's not really a concern, we'll seat everybody 6 feet apart, and the government just flat says no. And they say, okay, well, we'll still try to be in compliance with it since you're saying groups of more than 10. So what we're going to do is we're just going to have everybody gather in the parking lot. The preacher will stand outside, give a sermon. They can listen to it on the radio. They will be isolated in their own cars, and the government still says no. That's how you get people that get frustrated to the point that say, well, screw it. You guys aren't going to let us do it no matter what we try to do, no matter how accommodating we try to be to you. You don't want to give us even a crumb. And that's what happens when you get to things like this. That's how you turn what is going to be a protest of people that are going to be law-abiding, that's how you turn them against you. And I'm in no way advocating or trying to excuse when protesters do something that they shouldn't. I'm not in any way advocating breaking the law or anything like that. I'm just saying that governments need to be, and that didn't happen today, but governments need to be aware of the fact that when you go past the point of reasonability and when you specifically target people that are trying to work with you, that are trying to operate in good faith, and at every turn you slap them away, that does not build a good, trusting relationship between government and citizen. And that's how you're going to get people that are very upset with you and elected officials. That's how you lose an election. Because some voters, and I'm not saying that everybody that does this is automatically going to lose an election, even though they probably should. Voters may not remember how you voted or whether or not you signed X bill that you did at some point. Voters are going to remember when they tried to come out with their family, peaceably protest and voice their opinions, and you had the cops come down and make sure that they couldn't. That's something they're going to remember, and that's something they're going to tell a lot of people about. And so, the thing that has been most disappointing today is that I saw a bunch of American citizens that wanted to exercise three of their most important rights and were denied so, even though they tried to operate in good faith, the government did not. And that was really disappointing to me. But that's going to be the whole show for today. Like I said, I was out and about today and I, you know, just couldn't put together a daily dose of stupid or go into any of the national news and didn't have time to put together a chaplain's report. So we're just going to go ahead and wrap it up for now. But thank you for listening and please continue to watch for any more special broadcasts we have in the future. In the meantime, stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.